On today's podcast, tape 17, Their Satanic Majesty's Request and Beggar's Banquet by the Rolling Stones.
Trust the Wizards present Robert Pollard's Guide to the Late 60s. Before going on tour with his band, Guided by Voices, in 2001, Robert Pollard recorded his favourite records onto 62 double-sided cassettes. Music from 1966 to 1971, from the best-known bands of the era to obscure, unheard-of psychedelic curios. The Wizards are on a mission to listen to and explore every groove. Kicker and Chorizo invite you to turn off your mind, relax, and float downstream as you listen to Robert Pollard's Guide to the Late 60s.
So the first and only two albums by the Rolling Stones that are on Pollard's list, we have Their Satanic Majesty's Request, recorded February to October 1967 at Olympic Studio in Barnes, and released in December 68. Originally was had the album Cosmic Christmas. It's not very festive. And then Beggar's Banquet, which was recorded the following year, March to July 68, and was released also in December 68. The personnel of the band, the same on both albums. Mick Jagger, Keith Richards, Bill Wyman on bass, Charlie Watts on drums, Brian Jones on all kinds of different things. Lots and lots of different...
Mostly on various A-class drugs, I'd have thought.
Well, that too, yes. But also, you know, especially on the Satanic Majesty's Request, he's on mellotron, flute, backing vocals, various different types of percussion, saxophone, guitar, vibraphone, glockenspiel, theremin, jew's harp, brass, organ, dulcimer, recorder, and various Indian sort of woodwind and stringed instruments, and the harp. He's on less things on the second album, and we'll talk about a bit about why that was later on. So the second album is the same, but also with various other people supporting, notably Nicky Hopkins on piano, who's on a lot of the tracks, string arrangements by John Paul Jones, again, as we've had quite a few of his, and the people like the Small Faces popping up on backing vocals and that kind of stuff, a bit of extra percussionists on the second album. But the second album, Beggar's Banquet, was a kind of return after a couple of more psychedelic albums, and Beggar's Banquet was a return more to the old bluesy rock sound of the earlier albums. So the two quite contrasting styles on these albums, even though, you know, there's a lot of crossover. So did you have a leaning towards one or the other of those styles that you found more to your taste, Skeeter?
Well, Their Satanic Majesty's Request is supposedly the psychedelic one, isn't it? And I think if you'd asked me, do I prefer psychedelic rock or blues rock, I'd have said psychedelic rock. But I certainly don't prefer this album. I mean, I think it's an attempt to be something that they're not necessarily very good at. So
yeah,
I definitely prefer the one which sounds like the Rolling Stones. I mean, it sounds like a number of the songs, sort of the country-y ones, sound like stuff off Let It Bleed a little bit.
That's right, yeah.
Which will come next, right?
Pointing in direction to where they're going with the next album. Yeah, interesting. Yeah. You should say you like the one that sounds like the Rolling Stones, because I like some of that, but I kind of like the ones where they don't sound much like the Rolling Stones. What I tried to do when I was listening to this was try and forget that it is the Rolling Stones and just listen to this as if this is a brand new album I've never heard before, by some band I've never heard of before. And I found that easier to do with Their Satanic Majesty's Request because it doesn't sound like the Rolling Stones. It's impossible to forget it's the Rolling Stones on the other one because it, you know, it sounds so stereotypically like the Rolling Stones.
Well, so, it has a couple of really big Stone songs on it as well, doesn't it?
Whereas it does, yeah.
This one doesn't so much.
Well, that's the other thing is, when I was a teenager, let's just go back a bit. So
quite a long way, actually.
Well, I look a long way back, yeah. So when I was a teenager, I have to take my hat off to my friend Joanna's dad, Neil, and my friend Simon's dad, Richard. They had quite a lot of Stones albums, and I used to go around. They had a lot of good albums from the 60s, and my mum and dad didn't have any Stones albums. So I went round and with my C90s, my TDK tapes, and I recorded quite a lot of them. And neither of them, I'm not sure if maybe neither of them owned their Satanic Majesty's Request, or they did have it and I didn't bother recording it, possibly put off by the weird hippie-looking cover. But I'd never heard this album until more recently, whereas I did have on one of my C90s, I did on one side of one of my C90s, I had Beggar's Banquet. But it wasn't an album that I particularly really liked, compared to Let It Bleed, which, as you mentioned before, which I really did like, and Aftermath, which I really did like, and a live one called Get Your Yayas Out, which I remember liking a lot. So the Satanic Majesty's Request was completely new to me, apart from one song. Whereas, of course, Street Fighting Man and Sympathy for the Devil in particular are two of the Stones' best-known songs, and they're both on Beggar's Banquet. But, yeah, I had that album on tape years ago. It must say something that I had it on tape. I've not got any of those tapes anymore. At no point have I ever decided to replace any of those Stones albums that I once had on tape with an actual CD copy I could listen to.
Well, it's funny, isn't it? Because, you know, we both have, I think, certainly a large crossover in terms of musical taste. And you know, we feel fairly similar about the Beatles, I think. Mm-hmm. And we both feel fairly similar about the Stones, which is that actually they've had little impact on our listening life, musical life. I don't know if you could argue that they've influenced the bands that we like, maybe. I don't know. You put out a poll on our Twitter to ask people whether they would agree with the statement that the Stones are the second most influential band from the 1960s after the Beatles or something like that.
Yeah.
Have you got any results from that?
Yeah, the question was, it says, the Stones are generally held up as being second only to the Beatles as the greatest band of their era. Do they deserve that status? It's pretty much half and half, with very slightly more people voting for no. Mm. I would be interested, obviously there's no way for us to know, I would be interested in knowing the ages, because I spoke to my dad about this, who was obviously around at the time, and he was very much, no, absolutely the Stones were the second, and to question that in the 60s, nobody did. It was just accepted by everybody. The Beatles are the most popular band and the best, and the Stones are the next, and there's no question of, you know, the Kinks or the Who or the Small Faces or anybody like that being, you know, the second. And if you look at the statistics, the chart statistics, he's quite right. You know, the Beatles had 17 UK number ones, the Stones had 8 UK number ones, all between 64 and 69. You know, if you leave aside Cliff and the Shadows, who did have a lot of number ones in the 60s, but they were all sort of pre-Beatles and Stones. They're pretty much done by 1963. You know, Jerry and the Pacemakers had 3. The Kinks had 3. Nobody else got close to the Stones' 8. Nobody got anywhere near it. So in terms of commercially successful...
And that's before Start Me Up.
Well, yeah, that wasn't number one. But, yeah...
Wasn't it?
No.
In my heart, maybe.
Really? Yeah? Okay. That's the Stones song you like, is it? Right, okay. In terms of commercially successful, they definitely were the second most, after the Beatles.
I want to ask you a question, because you said you didn't ever get round to getting their Satanic Majesty's Request or Beggar's Banquet on any format apart from a half a stolen C90 or whatever.
Yeah.
Do you actually own any Rolling Stones albums now?
I don't think so. No, I'm sure I don't. No.
I own 4.
Mm-hmm.
These 2, which I've bought because of this project.
Yeah.
Let It Bleed, which is great.
Yeah.
And to be honest, the only other Rolling Stones album you need is Big Hits. That's got all songs on it.
Yeah.
And every time I've listened to another album, including these 2, and we will get into a little bit more detail, I should think, later on, it's always been a bit disappointing.
Well,
it's like, because they're so revered, because they're so, as you say, so second only to the Beatles in terms of hits and all that, and we know the songs in the same way that we know the Beatles songs, I'm kind of expecting the albums to be better than they are.
Yeah, they're not very good. If I'd agree with you, if the kind of the best album, to paraphrase Alan Partridge, you know, you have to say the best of the Rolling Stones is the best of their albums. They're a singles band then. You look at these greatest albums of all time polls, and you know the Beatles are up there and deservedly so. The Stones, even, I mean, the Beatles usually have, you know, Revolver and Sergeant Pepper, usually the ones that are very near the top. The Exile on Main Street seems to be the main one that gets scored high on these things.
Yeah, can you name any songs I thought that are good?
Tumbling Dice, yeah.
That's it.
Well, yeah, I've listened to that album. I've listened to it quite a bit. I don't really get it. What you were saying about the influence thing as well, I was thinking about this today. I was thinking, can I name any bands who are like one of my favourite bands who you could argue were more influenced by the Stones than by the Beatles?
Manic Street Preachers.
No, I don't think that's correct. No, I don't think they were necessarily influenced more by the Stones than by the Beatles. The only one I could think of that we both like, because you don't really like the Manic Street Preachers, so they don't count, is Green on Red. I couldn't think of a single, or Chuck Prophet, you know, I couldn't think of a single other band that we both like who you could honestly say was more influenced by the Beatles than the Stones. I can think of plenty who don't sound like they're particularly influenced by either. But,
yeah,
you know, mostly.
But I mean, I think I can get down to the nub of why I'm not a huge Stones fan. And I've been on record on one of our past podcasts, I think, of saying that the Rolling Stones have got five decent songs and that's it. I think the reason for it is that I don't buy Jagger. You know, he's from Dartford, for fuck's sake, not from Mississippi. And all this cod American swampy, I just don't buy it. And I think if you buy into that, if you get that, if you think, okay, well, this is just the singer who is an American and it's that scene, it's the bluesy thing, fine. But I can't get past the fact that it's just made up. I think that's my problem with it. And that could be a failing with me. But a lot of the songs that I really have a distaste for in these two albums are the ones where he goes very, you know, very bluesy singer, right. American bluesy.
So there's an interesting question of, well, in that case, you know, what your question is can any white man from the UK sing the blues, I guess? So that's a different argument. We'll be here all night talking about that one. But Jagger himself, I've always found as a faintly ridiculous kind of character. I remember...
Deliberately so.
The way he moves. Again, I spoke to my dad about this and my mum today. Because I was saying, well, look, every time I see him dancing, I don't mean now when he's an old geezer. I mean, like, see old black and white clips of him on Ready, Steady, Go and stuff like that. The way he moves looks stupid to me. It looks really ridiculous. And yet my dad said, if you went to, you know, a nightclub or somewhere like that in the 60s, you would see both blokes and girls doing dance moves that you could tell, okay, they're imitating it to some degree or other, Mick Jagger, and the influence he had on the way people moved and grooved and dance floors. And my dad, one of the things my dad said in defence of the Rolling Stones today was that their records are far more danceable than the Beatles.
Not sure about these two. certainly the first one.
He was more talking about Brown Sugar and stuff like that, but...
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah, Mick Jagger as a singer, I don't mind his voice. I have to say, I've got no problem with his voice most of the time. It's the visuals that always kind of thought, well, that's, I mean, singers in rock bands are supposed to be cool, and I've never thought he was cool ever.
Have you never crossed the road and done the double hand clap as you walk across the road? Have you never done that? No.
No, I might give it a try tomorrow though. I'll make sure the green man is on, but before I do it. Then, so shall we talk about some favourite songs or at least favourite songs on these albums then?
Well, it's interesting because if we look at their Satanic Majesty's Request, we should point out that actually one of the best things about this album is the title. I mean, I think that's quite clever. It's a nice little pun. You're aware of where it comes from, I presume.
I'm not, no. You're going to need to explain that one to me.
So I don't know if it's still the case, but certainly in the 1960s, the British passport said Her Britannic Majesty requests and requires, and that was the on the first page of the passport. And so this is a little play on that, which I like. I like the title. So that's good. I like that bit. I quite like the cover. Cool. It's quite a neat cover.
You're clutching at straws here, aren't you? You like the cover and you like the title. Okay. It's when the music starts where it all starts to go wrong.
I had a little interaction with a friend of the pod, Will Neville, who is a big Beatles fan, and I wasn't sure whether he was a big Rolling Stones fan or not. I said, I bet you like this album more than I do. And he said, well, there are two great songs on it.
Uh-huh.
And I would say there are two good songs on it.
Right.
And the two songs that I like, well, the one that I like more than anything else on it is 2,000 Light Years From Home.
Yeah.
I really like it. That, yeah, that's it. That is a decent song. And She's a Rainbow's All Right.
Mm-hmm.
And then after that, you know, Citadel's okay, The Lantern's okay, the rest of it I can do without. And Sing This All Together, dreadful, and dreadful twice.
Yes, which is, and it's there. It seems to be like their attempt to create some kind of come and let's all get together anthem in the vein of All You Need Is Love. And it's okay the first time it comes.
It's a mess.
And the second time, the second time it's not even the same song, is it? It's just, I mean, it's summed up by early on. It's eight and a half minutes long, and early on someone says, "Where's that joint?" And then they jam on one chord for 7 minutes. And then at the end they sort of vaguely come back in with the sing this, why don't we sing this all together bit. Yeah, like you say, it wasn't that great the first time around, and it certainly isn't good enough to warrant two appearances on the album.
So side one is by far the weaker for me. So the A side, rather.
Yeah.
The only songs that I would say that I don't mind are Citadel and 2000. Is it 2000 Man on that one as well?
Okay.
But the B side, She's a Rainbow and 2000 Light Years From Home, both decent songs. Actually, 2000 Light Years From Home, I didn't realise until doing a bit of prep for this pod that was the lyrics were written in prison. Did you know that? Jagger wrote the lyrics to that while he was in Brixton Prison, apparently. Ah,
right.
So he should learn from that, get himself nicked a bit more often.
Mm.
But what's really good about that is obviously the riff's excellent. Actually, the drums are really good. And I know we've just lost Charlie Watts, haven't we? But actually, you can see his quality. The drumming is throughout really, really good, I think. I like the strings on that as well. And there's some funny noises. That's the one I really like. What about you?
Well, yeah, I really like that one too. And I just think if you heard that for the first time ever, you'd never heard that song before, and here's some kind of long-lost single from 1968 or 67 or whatever, And you know, there's some band you never heard of, and you'd think, wow, that's fantastic. I also think the same of Citadel. I've never heard that song before.
You really like that,
and
yeah.
I really like that. I think it's a good tune. It's really interesting. It doesn't sound like the Stones, although it's got that really good guitar riff as well. Yeah, I really like that. I really like all the songs you said. I think I like The Lantern a bit more than you as well. You said that was all right. I really like that too. The piano's really good. It's got a good psyche kind of tune. She's a Rainbow's good. The other one I like, which you haven't mentioned, is called In Another Land. It's slightly spoiled by those terrible tremolo sound effects on the vocals. If they took that off, it would be a much better song. Because it is a good song. But it's just they've overdone it with the tremolo effect on the vocals, so it's all blah, 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 blah.
That's Wyman singing as well, isn't it?
Is it? All right.
Yeah. Wyman singing on it.
He wrote that one. It's supposed to be in some way a criticism of the rest of the band for the direction they were taking with this album.
Is that right?
Yeah.
I wrote down the vocal effect is really annoying. I wrote down about that. But I also said it was sort of psychedelic by numbers. Okay, it's all right. Interestingly, though, and we should remember that we're doing this podcast because of Robert Pollard, mm-hmm. and his presumed love for this album. And, of course, the end of In Another Land, there's a whole bit where it is Bill Wyman snoring.
Yeah, yeah.
And that is apparently real footage of him snoring. And Guided by Voices have a song called Ex Supermodel.
Yeah,
which features a guy called Gary Phillips snoring, and I wonder whether that was a nod to this song. I have no idea, but let's say. But I also wrote down "Je ne suis pas un rock singer."
That's his solo song, isn't it, from the early 80s? Je suis un rock star. Just
that's right.
Rock star, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, see what, that, I, see what that, I did there?
You know earlier on when you said there's only five Stones songs you like? Is Start Me Up and Just Sweeze and Rockstar
I think you've answered yourself in the question, haven't you?
Right. There, so there, you've basically got five. I've got five songs there. You've got four songs you like. I really do like those five
three.
Songs.
I'd say three. But, three songs I like.
Okay. The other ones, the Gomper is just your obligatory. We've had a few of these, haven't we? You've got to have your obligatory Indian song. On a record, haven't you?
Dreadful.
It's dreadful. Yeah. It's just boring. It's just boring and indulgent. And the last song, On With The Show, which is, you know, stupid. Again, they seem like, oh, the Beatles did that sort of music hall thing with Sgt. Pepper. Let's do a bit of that.
There's a lot of aping, isn't there, in it? There is an attempt to be the Beatles here, I think, which doesn't work. I think Jagger's famously said that he thinks there's only two good songs on this. I think it's felt within the Stones' oeuvre to be pretty pretentious.
Yes.
I mean, they're pretty pretentious anyway, but this is like more pretentious than anything.
And I read a thing where he was saying they needed an editor, and basically every idea they had went into the album and was put out.
Well, they were producing it themselves for the first time, weren't they? Yeah. And I think that shows, because it does feel like there's just too much in there. And actually, if you strip back some of these other songs, they might be a bit better, but. Yeah, for me, no thanks.
The White Album. We talked about that with the White Album, with the lack of a producer, and the lack of quality control, which brought down our average scores for the White Album way, way down. Okay, what about Beggar's Banquet? Well, let's start with Beggar's Banquet. It's Sympathy for the Devil.
Do you want to score for this one, then? Do we not going to score those?
Should we do them both at the end?
All right, I'm excited.
Let's keep the listener in suspense. Presumably,
nobody listens to the end, you know that, don't they?
Presumably, Sympathy for the Devil, that's got to be in your five Rolling Stones songs you like, right?
Right.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
So we've got Sympathy for the Devil, Start Me Up, Je Suis un Rockstar. What are the other two? Are any of the others on Beggar's Banquet?
Well, obviously, okay, so Sympathy for the Devil starts side A.
Yeah.
And is a tremendous song, brilliant song, fantastic song.
Yes, their best song, yeah.
Almost certainly, yeah, I was going to say their best song. And actually, the B side starts with Street Fighting Man, which I think is a great song as well. So those two, really like.
Okay, I thought before listening to this album, if you'd said, "Do you like the Stones song Street Fighting Man?" I'd have gone, "Yeah, I really like that one." And then I've been listening to that, but I really don't like it.
Don't you?
It's just a poor rewrite of Jumping Jack Flash. It's not as good. It sounds like Jumping Jack Flash, and it's not as good. I've got a story about Jumping Jack Flash for you later on as well, so we'll come back to that. But yeah, I don't really like it. I just think it's the tune is.
But do you know why it's like that? Yeah, exactly. Because that tune, as you call it, is police sirens.
Is it?
Yeah.
Well, the police sirens are usually a minor third apart. So, yeah, that would sound right. Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah. So okay. The one I really like, apart from Sympathy of the Devil, Sympathy of the Devil is the best song on this album, the best song by the Stones, and by a long way. I really like Jigsaw Puzzle. A little bit like what we talked about with that Paul Revere album, where you've got a sort of Dylan-y, mid-60s Dylan-influenced song. I think
the reason you like Jigsaw Puzzle, I wrote this. I thought that Jigsaw Puzzle's all right as well. It is the Dylan imitation, isn't it? Apparently, it was written as a response to Stuck Inside of Mobile. But I think the reason that it sounds so good is that it follows two really terrible songs in Dear Doctor and Parachute Woman.
Well, Parachute Woman in particular, it's just bluesy, boring. And not only is it blues rock, which neither of us are big fans of, but also it's blues rock with a ding, 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 6/8 rhythm, which is another thing I don't really like, generally speaking.
And it's full of single entendres.
Is it? I didn't pay enough attention to the lyrics.
Parachute Woman, Land on Me Tonight is how it starts, and it goes downhill on there from there on. Yeah. But dreadful, dreadful song. So yeah, Jigsaw Puzzle a bit more interesting, certainly, than that.
Okay.
Go on, what else did you like on it?
That's about it, really. I don't mind Dr. Doctor. I don't mind Dr. Doctor. I quite like that. It kind of reminds me a little bit
of... Dr. Doctor is UFO. Your Dear Doctor is something.
Sorry, Dear Doctor, yeah. Or the Thompson Twins.
Doctor, Doctor by UFO, of course, a classic song.
Or Doctor, Doctor by the Thompson Twins. Absolute banger. But it's not. Dear Doctor, yeah, I quite like that. Again, that sounds like where they were going on Let It Bleed, doesn't it?
Right.
Prodigal Son.
But he doesn't... I mean, this is the Dartford Delta here. The Dartford Delta singer. And it's just... come on, man.
Yeah.
You know, he rhymes knife with heart. How's that possible?
Yeah, I don't know. But the only other one, you definitely... If you don't like the bluesy ones, you definitely won't like Prodigal Son. I didn't like that.
Blind Boy Jagger.
Well, the guitar playing on that is, if you're a fan of Scotty Moore, Elvis's guitarist, as I am, then you can't resist the guitar playing on that. It's really fantastic. The picking on that song is really fantastic. It's not a very good song, but the guitar playing is great. So I didn't get tired of listening to that. The rest of it, didn't really like it at all. Yeah.
Well, I'm gonna say that there are bits of other songs that I like.
Okay.
Can we just say, by the way, Stray Cat Blues has got some nice drumming on it, but honestly, and it surely was tasteless then as now. I mean, it's basically saying that that you know, having a liaison with a 15-year-old girl is fine.
Oh.
I mean, was it? I mean, I don't think it was in 1967, and it certainly isn't now. So, yeah. But the hi-hat on it's good.
But
Factory Girl I quite like. I like the percussion on that. And apparently Charlie Watts is playing the tabla with sticks, which is unheard of in Indian classical music.
He's supposed to play with his hands, right?
Yeah.
Yeah,
exactly.
Okay.
I really like the rhythm on that, which raises it above the ordinary. And I like the fiddle on it as well.
Uh-huh.
It reminds me a little bit of... that could be on that... what was that film called? Oh, Brother, Where Art Thou? That sounds... That sort of sound.
Oh, yeah.
Which I do like. I do like that. So I say that's okay. Salt of the Earth, which is, you know, a bit dull, isn't it? But the sort of the final bit where it goes into a gospel choir...
Mm-hmm.
I quite like that bit of it.
Yeah,
as well.
That was quite good, and it's kind of like their first attempt at writing. You can't always get what you want. They did it again on the last. It is the last track of the next album, isn't it? You can't always get.
It is much better,
and it's way better. Yeah, way better. Yeah. Okay, but it's okay, but it doesn't. It's not very memorable, and you'd think well. Yeah, there's a lot of better Rolling Stones songs than that one.
But interestingly, with this one, the two songs that I really don't like on it, I don't like on it because of the lyrical content rather than the sound. There's a lot that don't do very much for me.
Mm-hmm.
But actually, on the previous album, there were songs that I really didn't like.
Right.
And there aren't any here. Right. It's just a bit boring.
Yeah.
And I wonder if you're into the blues, man. Whether it might be more your thing. I don't know. It's not my thing.
No, it's not. I found it pretty boring, the Beggar's Banquet. I thought I was going to like it more. I thought I was going to hate the Satanic Majesty's Request. And I liked about half the songs on it. And I thought I was going to really like Beggar's Banquet a lot more than I did. But no, really...
Do you remember liking it more when you were 16?
I remember, because it was a tape, so I remember putting Sympathy for the Devil on a lot, which was the first song, and then rewinding it and putting that one again. I don't remember I don't remember really listening to it very much. Yeah. I don't think it made much of an impression on me at all, whereas some of the other albums I take, in particular Aftermath and Let It Bleed, I did listen to the whole thing quite a lot. Yeah. Right. Anyway, my Jumpin' Jack Flash story.
Oh, yeah, okay. Go on then.
So that Jumpin' Jack Flash was released as a single in between these two albums, but isn't featured on either of these albums.
Do you like it?
I quite like that one. Is that one of your five?
No, but it's all right, yeah.
Yeah, I quite like that one. Anyway, many years ago, I went on a lad's holiday, you know, when I was a teenager. Lad's holiday to Turkey, with lots of, heavy drinking and lager. And we got to playing a game one night when we were bored, which was kind of musical charades, where we would say the name of a band and then we would do a mime that was a song title by that band. Anyway, I said, right...
Am I ahead of you here? I mean, it's going to be something...
No. I said, right, well, which Rolling Stones song is this, right? And then I jumped in the air, I did a scissor kick, and I went to pull down my shorts. I was on holiday, I was wearing baggy shorts. You know, yeah. It was the 80s. Obviously, that was a mime to do Jumping Jack Flash.
Very good, yeah.
But what accidentally, when I pulled down my shorts, I accidentally pulled down my underpants a little bit as well.
Ooh.
Exposing my genitalia. So my mate said, Little Red Rooster.
Well, it's nice that little Chirito had a go, had a, an air in there.
Yes, indeed. Yeah, I asked my mum as well about the Stones because my mum's very good at telling me that she went to. Okay, oh, I saw them back in whenever. Oh, that's good. Yeah, that's like your proper historical moment. You've got to tell me all about it. Well, I don't really remember anything about it.
But my mum's like mother, like son. To be fair,
my mum saw the Stones at Southend Odeon. On a package tour with lots of other sort of bands on the bill. The Stones weren't the headliners. The Stones hadn't had any real hits by that point. My mum thought she went because the Dave Clark Five were on the bill, but as far as I can tell from Googling it, there was no package tour where the Rolling Stones were on with the Dave Clark Five, but I will and played Southend. But I will continue to investigate. Anyway, I asked my mum what it was about it, and she said, I don't really remember much, but I think at one point, Mick Jagger got his bum out.
Wow.
Yeah.
See, that's all we're missing here. If we listen to these records again with the image of a Jagger arsehole...
Yeah.
It's going to give us a whole new take, isn't it?
Yeah. And, of course, so the other part we didn't really talk about is the sort of lesser influence of Brian Jones on the second album, because they were, you know, not necessarily by his... With his
hadn't he been booted out by then? I mean, my understanding is that actually his influence waned throughout the first album, throughout the Satan's Majesty's Request. He's on more of the songs.
He's on it a lot.
But he wasn't part of the group in the sense that he would just turn up and do something, and then bugger off, and he wasn't recording with the rest of the band. And then by the time we got round to the next one, he was hardly involved at all, right? I don't know when they kicked him out exactly.
The following year, actually. But this came out in December, and they kicked him out the following year. He was on the first... to be fair to Brian, that part you said about people turning up pretty out of it and not really knowing what they were doing, that applied to quite a lot of them when you're talking about their Satanic Majesty's Request. But by the in Beggar's Banquet, they were a bit more professional, or at least Jagger and Richards were a bit more professional. And whereas Jones was, there's a quote here from Jimmy Miller, who produced it, said, Brian would show up occasionally when he was in the mood to play, and he could never really be relied on. When he would show up at a session, let's say he just bought a sitar that day, he'd feel like playing the sitar. So he'd look in the calendar to see if the Stones were in the studio. He might have missed the previous four sessions, and we'd be doing, let's say, a blues thing, and he'd walk in with a sitar, which was totally irrelevant to what we were doing, and he'd want to play it. I used to try and accommodate him, but I would isolate him, put him in a booth, and not record him onto any track that we really needed. And the others, particularly Mick and Keith, would often say to me, just tell her to piss off and get the hell out of here. Which doesn't sound very nice from the other members of the Stones, but then, you know, as Jagger has acknowledged in more recent interviews, they were young men. They didn't really have much experience of what was happening to him in terms of his drug addiction. And they did used to take the mickey out of him, and it was a bit of a figure of fun. You know, his defenders would say he started the band, he named the band. He was arguably, for many years, the most talented musician in the band. And he was treated badly and kicked out and came to a sad end shortly after. I've also been investigating. I don't know if you're familiar with any of the sort of conspiracy theories around Brian's death.
Well, I've seen a film that suggests something, but I can't remember what. But no, not really. Enlighten me.
Well, I've just been reading up about it.
No, I don't think so.
No, I think it was Elvis even. Elvis wasn't involved. the Cubans? Possibly the Cubans? Yeah. No, I don't think so. Is any of that. I think he just drowned. I think I have been reading up about it quite a lot over the last week because it's quite interesting hearing all the theories. But I tend to go with the conclusion of the coroner and the renewed inquest they did about 40 years later, which is a sad story where he was just doing too many drugs and he just drowned.
Yeah. I think that's almost certainly what happened, and it's a complete waste of life, isn't it, really? But
yeah.
But you know, the rock and roll's full of these things.
Indeed.
Go on. Let's go back to their Satanic Majesty's request. Now, before I give you my score, can you remind me what score I gave the GTOs?
I can't. I remember it was low.
It was low. Well, I remember thinking that was basically dreadful, the worst record I've ever heard. This is better than that.
Good.
And there are two songs I agree with Will Neville that are okay on it, that are good. Well, one of them's good. One of them's good, one of them's okay. And then there's another one which is probably okay as well. So there are 2.5 good songs on it. So I'm going to round that up to 4.
Okay. Well, I think it's better than that. I think there's 5 really good songs on it, all 5 of which I really like. And there's 5 not very good songs on it. So I'm going to give it a 6 out of 10. Because I
6 out of 10. Yeah. Okay, all right. So that's an average of 5. Well, you tell me what you're going to give Beggar's Banquet first, and then.
Well,
then
I'm going to give Beggar's Banquet 5 out of 10. There's even though there's only 2 songs on it that I really like, but the bad songs aren't as bad as the ones on their Satanic Majesty's Request, and the one in particular, Sympathy for the Devil, deserves more points. Rocky Zabs. I apologise for mispronouncing his name, but. Rocky Giorno, a Ghanaian percussionist, the guy who's playing the congas on that.
Oh, yeah, for the samba rhythm.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, he makes that song, doesn't he? He does. He makes that song.
Interestingly, have you read Bulgakov's Master and Margarita? You read that?
No.
First of all, you should read it. It's an excellent book.
Right.
And that apparently was the influence for this song. You know, about the devil in everything and all that.
Right. Okay.
It's a really good book. The other factor I've got about this song is that the woo-woo bit, which also, I think, makes it.
Yeah.
I think that pushes up another notch, the woo-wooing.
And the guitar solo as well. There's not many guitar solos on Stone songs, and that's a really good one. Yeah.
Correct.
Sorry,
the woo-wooing was added fairly late in the day. I can't remember who would be Jagger's girlfriend at that time. I can't remember.
I don't know. Pallenberg?
I don't know. Anyway, whoever it was kind of egging him on because he was obviously taking on the persona of the devil in the song.
Yeah.
Going, and she was in the studio bit, but not in the where they're being recording, in the behind the screens.
Yeah.
Going, who? And they like this. They changed it instead of who, meaning, come on, who are you?
Right.
To woo-woo, and that's where the woo-woo bits. And I agree that song is what makes this album worth having at all. I'm going to give it a 5. I like it more than the other one. And as you say, that's because there are fewer songs that I really don't like on it. And there are 2 excellent songs on it.
Okay. Great. So we both gave that one a 5.
We both gave it 5.
Right. So where are we going next? What's our next tape that we're listening to?
Well, I'm quite looking forward to the next one, actually, because it's a band that I think I like more than you. Excuse me. Tape 18 has 2 Pink Floyd songs. So Pink Floyd albums. We've got Piper at the Gates of Dawn and Saucerful of Secrets, both of which I know very well, and I wonder whether you've heard either.
Never. But I don't like 70s Pink Floyd. I've never really heard 60s Pink Floyd.
Robert Pollard's Guide to the Late 60s is a Trust the Wizards production. You can find out more at pollard60s.com and on Twitter at pollard60s. If you liked it, then please subscribe and review wherever you get your podcasts. You may also enjoy their other podcasts, which you can find at trustthewizards.com. Original music by the Malibu Storks. Kika Revelves and Chorizo Garbanzo are currently appearing in Waiting for Godot at the Mail Theatre in Leeds.